who amongst us like didn't love Lil Wayne mixtapes?
Right.
I think No Ceilings was just a metaphor for like, yeah, I think billionaires should exist. Just no ceilings on corporate earnings.
Yeah, no cap on the tax. No cap on the corporate tax. Yeah, he's making music for Republicans, and we, our goofy asses, are being like, man, I really connect with him. He gets me. He from the streets. Like, nah, this bitch is rich. He don't give a shit about you. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another spectacular episode of My Mama Told Me, the podcast where we dive deep, deep into the world of Black conspiracy theories, and we finally work to prove that Amari Stoudemire is the only person who can truly bring an end to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The man is going to fix everything for us. That giant Black Jew is going to solve the problem. Fuck Jared Kushner. I don't put my faith in Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner can't dunk on a nigga. Amari Stoudemire, now that's a motherfucker that can dunk on racism, on oppression, on the things that separate us as people. I am your host, Langston Kerman. As always, I'm happy to be here. I'm excited. My guest today, oh man, my guest today is somebody I've known since I was a young person, a high schooler, and we grew up doing poetry together. We competed in poetry in Chicago, and now he's gone on to become a very successful poet, and I am an idiot who claims that Amari Stoudemire is going to solve big issues out in the world. He's hilarious, he's smart, he's brilliant, you know his work. He wrote a book called Wild Hundreds, that's amazing. He's got a new book this year called Finna. He's amazing, you're gonna love him. Give it up for my guest, Nate Marshall, everybody.
Oh, what's up? I feel like,
what up, dog?
I feel like you ran out of funny niggas, so I'm very happy to be here.
I did not run out of funny niggas, but I did feel like, all right, I've been talking to a lot of funny people, but most of them are idiots. It would be nice to talk to somebody who maybe has some perspective out in the world and also is very funny.
Oh, dear God. This could be rough. Here we go. You're
an author, man. You gotta know something more than I do. You've certainly read your own book, which is more books than I've read total.
This is a lie. Yo, y'all don't know this. This motherfucker has a master's in poetry.
Yeah.
He's a liar.
And you know that that's the scam as well as I do. But hell yeah. We're all celebrating. I'm very excited that you're here. You came with a conspiracy theory that is one that I feel like I had heard as a kid, but had not put any real thought into. I think in part because I think I just didn't want it to be true. But you said, and I want to make sure that I get this right, because some of it is a wording that I put on it more than the wording that you gave me. But you said, my mama told me.
Timberland is owned and operated by the KKK.
Yeah, man, the Klan owns Timberland. Facts. Take it to the bank.
Yeah, the Klan owns Timberland, and they're using the logo as an emblem of hanging people from trees.
That's it. Stay woke.
Stay woke. Tell me more. Dig me into this.
Okay, so first of all, I think as a kid, I wanted this to be true because I didn't have no motherfucking money, and I couldn't actually have Tim's. And, you know, so like, I sure. think... I was woke before that was the word for it.
Yeah. You
know, like, I remember being in, like, kindergarten and being like, I'm not wearing Nikes because I heard they have sweatshops and shit, right? Now,
right.
Bear in mind, like, all of our stuff, more or less, is, like, made in sweatshops.
Yeah, it's a different kind of sweatshop, perhaps, but it's all being made by somebody who is not being paid the right amount for the work that they're doing.
Absolutely. And yeah. So, you know, so like that was me, right? I was like, I'm not wearing Nikes, which I don't even know what made me say that, because like we shopped at Payless, so it wasn't like yeah. we're really on the menu to begin
sure.
with. But I heard this about Tim's and I was like, cool.
Yeah.
I can cross off another thing I can't afford on the list.
Sure. You're like, good. I'll stick with these Wolverine boots. I don't right. need Timberland. These are perfect for me. These right, not these racist Wolverine. Yeah, these lugs. Birdman, you've never hurt anybody. Thank you for your lugs that you gave me.
Right. That's why Lil Wayne kissed him.
Yeah. All right. Birdman only gives out kisses. He's not a part of the KKK. Okay. Let me ask you this. Where did you first hear it? Do you remember the place or the person that first offered this theory to you?
You know, I don't exactly, but I want to say, even if this wasn't the place, this is like the energy that it had.
I love that.
My barber, when I was a kid, who like, I remember he like gave me a Zen Buddhism book that I maybe still have somewhere. And he was like, you're probably not going to understand this, but here you go. He was like, this is too... And I remember he would just like say incendiary things. Like one time,
right,
people almost got into a fight with him because he like stepped in the middle of the barbershop and was like, yo, fuck God.
Whoa!
Yeah, he was like that dude, right?
That's big in a black...
That's what I'm saying. He was that guy. And I remember like there was a point when like right around when I hit puberty, when I transitioned, I had had another barber earlier. And I transitioned to him being like my main guy. And he was always like dropping gems. And so this
It was after he said, fuck God, that you were like, I got to be with this dude more often. He's killing it. I like what he's saying.
Absolutely. Hey, look, I don't know. I liked it because he was just committed to chaos. And I appreciated that.
I want to hear more about it. So why, what was the motivation? Were you there and like, was there a clear like line of thinking, or was it just like y'all niggas in here looking like you praying in your heads and I want to fuck that up?
No, it's just like Saturday day, like barbershop banter, like Soul Train has gone off and now like niggas are bored. So you got to just start a pot.
Yeah. I get that. You do need a catalyst. You need a person who's willing to start the mess of it all. And like, good for him for being willing to be that person. And I agree. I think this Timberland secret KKK connection has that barbershop energy where it's just like, yeah, of course you're going to start doing math that ain't math. You're going to make connections that aren't really connections.
Right. Or are they?
Or are they? Thank you for saying that. Honestly,
that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. Because here I am sitting here pretending to have already proven and concluded that they're not connected. And when in fact, they very well could be.
Look, all I'm saying is it that crazy to believe that like evil white people own a thing? Evil white people own most things, arguably. This is, you know, That's just how I live my life. I realized this. I was talking to my homie the other day and I realized like I have like the one maxim that has never proven me wrong in life is that white folks is crazy.
Yes. Okay. I hear that. That feels 100% true. And to the larger or really more specific point in what you're saying is that at the end of almost every form of ownership is a crazy white person. So whether or not I can directly say this is the Ku Klux Klan is a different conversation. But if it's a crazy white person.
Yeah,
definitely, man. That owns Timberland.
Yeah, that's it. Easy. Like I believe that with my whole heart.
Sure.
I believe that like little children believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
this is my nigga Christmas. Like,
I got understand. You. I love that. Let me ask you this. Are you in any way an owner of a pair of Timberlands now? Do you have Tim's? Have you had Tim's since this?
Absolutely.
Revelation?
They're a great shoe. They're iconic. look, they look so cool, man. You see, when I went to college, I went to college on like a bunch of scholarships. And so I was getting refund checks, and it was the most money I'd ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I did was go, I bought Tim's. I bought these Pumas with the Chicago skyline on them.
Sure.
And like a bunch of like Levi's that just cause it was just like, yeah, go crazy.
That's totally fair. And I love that you spent your whole childhood being like, this thing is racist. There's racist, insidious shit happening here. And you're like, I got to get me some of them racist shoes. Them racist shoes, they're just built better than these regular old respectful shoes that man. Are filled with love and decency.
Don't nobody want civil rights boots?
No. That's fair. And I think we don't talk about that enough. Martin Luther King didn't want the shoes he had. He wanted a better shoe. It was the unfair quality of America that kept him from getting that better shoe. And that's what he was fighting for.
That's true. That's why they were marching. They were trying to prove a point. They were like, you see, these shoes is talking.
These shoes are talking, and they're becoming worse and worse because you're making me march miles and miles for my own freedom, for the opportunity to buy better shoes.
That's what I'm saying. We need some like cobblers in the system.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Okay, so you eventually find your way over to owning a pair of Tim's, to owning a better boot, as you put it. And I'm curious to know, how much of that you still believe to this day? Like how much of the Tim's KKK relationship, because we're acknowledging white people are sort of at the top of all of this ownership chain, but how much of it are you like, Tim's and KKK, y'all are still tied up?
I'm going to say, you want me to give it like a percentage?
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I'm going to say like 98%. I'm tapped in. I don't know. Look.
Yeah, I'm tapped in. I'm connect. Okay, so 98%, that's a lot. There's very little doubt in your mind. What's the 2%? What's that coming from?
Maybe Jay-Z has bought it by now. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
That maybe somewhere along the line, a person who is invested in capitalism bought it more than invested in oppression. Or at least oppression in the firsthand sense.
No, just specifically the Knowles Carters.
Oh, sure.
Specifically them.
Specifically, Jay-Z bought this and now he owns it. And you can judge Jay-Z as it were, but that's it.
That's it.
I love it. Okay, so potentially Jay-Z owned some part of Timberland and that makes it less of the KKK thing. Does the fact that Timberland and the KKK have this deep connection bother you? Are you unnerved by this truth that you believe?
Does it bother me? I mean, no. I don't know why. I feel like if we could get all the racists committed to making like pretty high quality consumer goods,
yeah,
then I'm like cool with that. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I don't know. I just, we need to give racists a trade.
Sure. Now you're talking. Now I like where you're going.
Like I had a guy once come and like do my like fix my roof or whatever, and I'm pretty sure he probably voted for Trump. But like,
right,
my roof was good after that. Like it was great. You know what I'm saying?
I think you're saying something really important here, that ultimately racists are going to exist. It's a fact out in the world. Like we can't do anything about it. And we're currently, you know, recording this in the wake of an election, right? But without the decision on the other end of it. And what the election has taught us from the numbers that are coming in is racists are still thriving and alive and feeling excited to go out and vote and do all the things that activate them. And to your point, let's give them a job to do. Don't just eliminate them from society. Make the motherfuckers put boots together.
That's what I'm saying. I want like fewer racist policymakers and more racist like woodworkers.
Hell yeah. I fuck with that. That's brilliant. I don't want any racist deciding where my money is being allotted, but I would love for racists to have to like work for tips on the things that I'm doing. You service work, just doing the shit that I don't want to do or know how to do because my hands are stupid and built for podcasts.
Right. I want a racist just taking my order at Chipotle. Just
hell yeah.
Give me some queso, Nick.
You're not allowed to put the meal together. I don't want you spitting in my shit, you racist motherfucker, but you could take the order right. And have to talk politely to me afterwards so that I tip. If you seem like a decent racist, I'll tip you. I'm not unreasonable.
Fuck it. YOLO.
Yeah.
That's what Drake said. That's how Drake's going to solve racism.
That's what Drake meant by YOLO was get racist people in the service industry more. Drake, and that's really what this podcast is all about. Drake has been doing the real work this whole time, and he deserves more credit for it, honestly.
How do we feel about Drake?
No, let's go into it. Thank you for asking. I think that Drake is a toxic man who makes phenomenal music, just unbelievably fun music for everybody to enjoy. And we are constantly conflating his toxicity with his fun music. And I don't know if that's fair, but at the same time, we have to do it with all these other artists who eventually are going to be revealed to be evil and awful. So maybe we should do it early with Drake.
That's true. I wish Drake like did some shit where he wasn't the star, but was like if he wrote like Broadway musicals or like elevator music or some shit where I could just be like, oh, this is catchy. And I didn't have to be confronted with like him as a figure. I'd feel much, much better about it.
Sure. I would love the Broadway musical Drake writes of a dude who is playing mind games with a woman for way too long while he cheats on. Yeah, that perfect Drake musical. Just him pretending to be sad while he texts other girls in the background.
Right. It's just like him being engaged for 8 years.
Yeah, right.
Just Drake is your auntie's friend who comes to every holiday and your grandma just looks at him sideways.
Nobody in the family likes him, but nobody can quite get rid of him.
Right.
The Drake story. Yeah, I love that. Okay, let's gear this back to Tim's. Do you think that because Tim's became really popular largely because of hip hop and black culture and like a lot of the sort of like artists that popularized them, that made them cool and sexy and shit. Do you think that they were aware of your conspiracy theory that the KKK was somehow involved in the production of Tim's?
Do I think they were aware?
Like, do you think Nas is rapping about Tim's and fully aware that like the KKK did some shit?
I think some of them, but I don't know if the word got around, right? Like, I think this might be, like, why, for example, like, I can't remember if it's all of Wu-Tang or just, like, Ghostface, but he basically only wears Wallabies. I think that's not just a style choice. It's like, I'm gonna keep these anti-racist shoes on. Like, I can't even rock with these Timberlands. Which is so interesting, especially because I feel like New York dudes are, you know, everybody in New York has like, you like go there and you just get two pairs of Tims. It's just like, what happens, right?
Yeah.
So Wu-Tang, they had the knowledge.
I love the idea that Ghostface has just been a responsible consumer this whole time. And like, yeah, he's a dude that got rich selling crack, but also I'm not going to support the KKK. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Like that's the real 5%. It's like the 5% of the population that knows KKK owns Timberland. Right. Everyone else is just an 85er. I don't know.
Sure. That's what that whole religion is all about, is the people who are woke enough to know what the KKK did with the Tims. I love that. I do think one of the things that sort of is coming out of this entire election period, this Trump experience, as you will, is hip hop's willingness to invest in
quote unquote white supremacy, or certainly like anti-blackness. And what we're seeing is a lot of them are real down for it. Like, they don't give a fuck enough to not buy in. So like, yeah, I believe a few of them knew and were like, fuck it.
Yeah, that's real. That's real. Well, first off, I just have to name that you said Trump Experience, which sounds like Disney Quest for racists. and that's fantastic. I honestly would maybe go to that. Yeah.
And the Trump Experience is just a ride.
It's just, yeah, like, right. Like, there's just arcade games that don't work.
And then when they don't work, they go, it's your fault. You dumb poor bitch. You should have had more money. Then it'll work. The Trump Experience.
The Trump Experience, baby.
Yeah. I think we're seeing so many hip hop artists connect themselves with ultimately like super sort of like a conservative theory, right? That like, I want to keep my money. I want to be protected. You know, I earned it. I want to keep it kind of energy.
Yeah.
And so like, that's not that far from being like, I like the shoes. I want to wear them. I don't care who made them.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of like always been, I mean, this is like one of the hip hop is, there's a lot of things in hip hop. It's a very complicated cultural space, but that strain has always been there, right? Like, we've always sort of celebrated, you know, how many references to Donald Trump or Warren Buffett or being Black Bill Gates or whatever are there in the music over the last, you know, many decades, right?
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, that's absolutely a thing. And I get why, or I get how like somebody like Trump, his kind of like, I don't give a shit about what people, if people think I'm rude or like how I talk to people. Like, of course, yeah. that's of course that would be attractive to someone like Ice Cube, who's like, look, there's women and there's bitches. Like, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, it's I think to your point, their language isn't that different. It's just the way that they choose to express themselves is the difference. And people were presuming for the longest that Black meant liberal, or Black meant hip hop, meant like being on the side of sort of like the oppressed. And it doesn't. It just means a nigga rapping. And sometimes niggas rap about mean, awful things, and they kind of mean it when they do.
Yeah. This is another thing, too, that we got to think about with like all the, with especially like all the sort of 90s and 2000s all-stars that Trump like trotted out for his goofy ass.
Yeah.
Plan, is like all these dudes have had money way longer than they didn't have money.
Yes. 100%. Yes. They and to that point, they have connected and built relationships that are so far from the money that they didn't have at this point, that not having money is an unfamiliar idea. That like, you literally don't know any broke people, and you ain't been broke in so long. What the fuck do I have to talk about with y'all?
Right. And like, particularly I'm thinking of those two dudes, right? Like, they're some of the rare kinds of rappers who actually have made enough money in their careers to conceivably like pull everyone else around them who they care about, like their families or whatever, into that same space, right? Yep. So it's not even necessarily like they go back to their hood. Like, you know, I'm a college professor. I'm not rich, but I do okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Right. I like own a house, but like if I want to go visit my family, they're still in the same motherfucking place I left them. Cause
yes.
I don't have money.
You can't
like
fix that. Yeah.
I can't fix that. Right.
You can't do anything for them. And I think that's exactly right. And I think the even scarier part, if we're really following that chain of fixing things or separating yourself, they also are two examples of people who went on to get a white institution's higher education. Right. So like in hip hop, a bunch of rappers pretend not to be smarter than they are, but these two dudes actually like went and got fucking like master's degrees and like bachelor's degrees and that whole thing. And I think part of that is them beginning to separate themselves from their poverty. It's them like moving away from all the things that connected them from brokenness, and they ain't going back no matter who's in charge of it.
No, sure. And I don't fault someone for not wanting to to be broke or not wanting to struggle. Like that's a
100%.
That's a human experience. That's a very human yeah. emotion. But them niggas some coons. I don't know. I don't mean, that's not even a joke. I don't even have anything funny to say about that. That's just, it's some coon shit. Look, man.
I love it. I think there's no better way to throw to a commercial break. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Nate Marshall and more My Mama Told Me. And we are back. Yeah, we're back here with more Nate Marshall, more My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about the insidious underbelly of the Timberland production and potentially the coons that support it, the coons that love it. I just love coon shit.
Listen, who amongst us hasn't loved coon shit once in our life?
And I think that's a fair point. Who amongst us hasn't been like, damn, I don't know. I kind of fuck with that. And then you have to wrestle with all of us love Terry Crews. That's the we love Terry. You know what I mean? That's the part that we're like pretending is like we fucking Terry was in Kendrick videos. Terry was in Friday After Next. We love Terry. And then Terry That's did true. Some coon shit. And some of us tried to negotiate with it and be like, I don't know. He's okay. And then we found out like, ah, damn, we got to jump off the Terry train.
Right. Remember when he made that fucking, I wish I could remember what it was. He made that, like, it was like an acrostic poem on Twitter.
I think it was
of the word coon or some shit. It was some.
Oh, wild. That's right. That's right. I do remember that now. It was like Jigaboo, but written down. And he had like written all the different, it was like Jigaboo just means just in tune with. It's like, get your goofy ass out of here, Terry.
Unfortunately, that's all my next book is just strictly going to be sure. racist acrostics. I'm going to be like Moon Cricket. Making our own nation. Creating riches.
And cool. Cutting edge. Cutting with a K. Cutting yes. edge.
Technology. Moon Cricket.
I love that. No, I do think that, to your point, there is a fair amount of stuff that, like, retroactively gets labeled as, like, coon shit or, like, unacceptable things for the quote-unquote black community. And sometimes this shit was cool, and then we realize later that it has a problematic nature to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My mom has a... her favorite book growing up was Little Black Sambo. She didn't know. Mm. She was just like, book has a little black boy on it. It's cool.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. It makes me feel seen.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I shouldn't be seen this way, but I didn't know that. I was a right. kid.
But it's literal coon shit.
Yeah.
Let's talk Tims. Let's talk Tims.
Okay. Here's one of the things that I discovered in my research about this Timberland controversy is that Timberland claims to have zero connection to the KKK, right? Absolutely zero connection to the KKK. And it was, in fact, founded by a dude named Nathan Schwartz in 1952. And you guessed it, he's a Jewish guy. And so his whole point is, what connection would I possibly gain or what would be the reasoning in me connecting with the KKK? He said it's a completely absurd suggestion and there's no validity to it. Okay, now here's where it gets exciting. The reality is that conspiracy theory actually came from a poem. It's a miracle. Yes. If you will, that you came to us with this because you are a fantastic poet. But the conspiracy itself came from a poem that was being spread around in March of 1999 all over the internet. And it was being attributed to Maya Angelou. There's a poem that was going around that Maya Angelou apparently wrote that actually makes all kinds of suggestions about like the various like communities that are connected. Like it's part of where that Tommy Hilfiger calling you nigger came from. That like that thing that everybody said was an Oprah episode was actually from this poem. And there's like things where it gets real problematic. At one point they go, you come up in the world wearing Versace clothes made by a homosexual male. So even when you say you are straight, it is very hard to tell. It's a wild piece of writing, right? But when we get to the Timberland section of it all, it goes, let me make sure. And for footwear, you wear Timberlands, even under the sun. That same tree, that's the symbol for them, could have been the same one your ancestors were hung from.
Wow.
And then it says, many people reclaim your status in this world and in your life. FUBU, in case you didn't know, stands for us, by us. Buying black will someday suffice. Do you know who owns Timberland fashion? Well, Timberland is owned by the president of the KKK. Surprise? Don't be. Read more books, black people. Always hope for the best and prepare for the worst. You may not get what you pay for, but you'll surely pay for what you get.
I like that because earlier it had like the rhyme scheme and then it was like, fuck that.
Yeah, fuck it.
I got knowledge to drop.
This shit too important. I can't be rhyming on these niggas all day.
Right.
I gotta talk that talk.
Wow. Wait, was this? This is absolutely not a Maya Angelou poem, is it?
No. No. How dare you, sir? How dare you? How dare you? I should hang up this Zoom call right now.
Look, I know it's not, but the world in which this is a Maya Angelou poem is
it's fantastic. A fun world. Yeah, I would love for Maya Angelou to be like just writing about Timberland and being super homophobic.
Like, what if that was just like the poem she did at like the Clinton inauguration? She was just like, and that could be the same. True. She just did that in the middle of poetic justice.
I love that. So Maya Angelou did not write this poem. And in fact, her representatives, when this poem began to circulate as a quote unquote Maya Angelou poem, immediately jumped on it. And their response is so funny because they basically said, look, that's clearly not a Maya Angelou poem. And we are offended that you would think writing this terrible would come from Maya Angelou. They weren't even offended by the ideas. They're like, this is a bad piece of writing. And my girl writes good. This is trash.
They were like, this shit has no bars.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. I hope to one day like get there where people are just like putting my name on shit I did not say.
That's pretty cool.
That's a different level. That's like Maya, like fucking Mark Twain and Shakespeare.
Yeah. And so part of the reason that I think that it began circulating that way is because in the year 1999, when it sort of is becoming a thing, right, this poem that's being posted all over the internet, there aren't real ways of tracing things. And it's a poem about like black life and black struggle in America. And the name most synonymous with black poetry at that time is Maya Angelou. Right. That's who you would go to for this information. So it became almost like a weird game of telephone, if you will.
Right. Damn. I know why the caged bird sings. Cause you niggas are wearing like Burberry. Like what? What an right. Incredible line of logic.
It's wild. So this happens, and then it starts to kind of snowball, right? That after we start seeing this poem circulating on the internet, then there's this quote that gets attributed to the CEO of Timberland. And at this point, they're not naming the CEO, but they're on this site called Naha Daily Report. They posted that basically quote saying, Timberland's new appointed CEO lost it at a earnings press conference and revealed that he'd rather not see blacks and Latinos in his boots during the summertime, admitting that it's just tacky to wear boots in the summer. They're work boots, but let's be honest, they don't like work, is what he was supposed to have said.
Wow. Oh my God. I wish this was all very true. Wow. I want this Netflix documentary. God damn it. Wow. Wow. So many New York motherfuckers I know would just be deeply hurt and offended by such a statement. Because all they do is wear boots in the summer.
Right. Not only are you telling me I don't work, but also you're discrediting my entire fashion, my entire sense of self when you say shit like that. So it gets even more fascinating because this site, Naha Daily Report, apparently it's no longer a website, or at least not a very high functioning one. But Naha Daily Report was a predecessor to The Onion, that it was meant to be like a ironic website where they make jokes and shit. But as you can clearly see, that's not a good fucking joke. That's just a fake thing you put on the internet and like cause chaos and dissension amongst the community.
Damn. Wow. Huh. But is this a joke, or is this like the joke that's true?
Because I keep talking.
I'm just saying this still doesn't seem untrue to me. I don't know. Like, yes. Sure. Yes. Okay. The founder was Jewish. Yep. That's true. But presumably, right, this founder, he had business partners. He had other people in the business. There probably weren't, you know, many Black folks, if any. Mm-hmm. Any Puerto Ricans or Mexicans, Asian folks. It was a bunch of white people. And so, it just, chances are, there was somebody in there who was clanning it up.
Okay, I'm glad you're saying this, because up to this point, we've at least I thought we were working to discredit some of this theory. But you're like, nah, fuck that. I'm still not sold. And I'm glad you're not sold. Double down, my friend, because in 1993, hip hop has started to take over. They're investing big in Timberland, and Timberland is sort of becoming a brand of the urban youth. But the Timberland executives are not necessarily bought into that yet, right? So in 1993, in a New York Times interview, the then VP, Jeff Swartz, which is the grandson of the original Swartz, Nathan Swartz, who was in charge of this shit, actually said in an interview, Timberland is being adopted by a consumer that we didn't know existed relative to our target audience, which he described as honest, hardworking people. So basically, he said, like, these niggas grabbing it and we ain't really planned for them. And also, they're not honest or hardworking the way that we were aiming. This is some other shit that ain't honest and hardworking, and we don't know what to do with that.
Listen. Y'all, stay woke. Sounds Klan adjacent. And that's from the New York Times. That's not even...
No, that's a real article from the New York Times. In which he goes on to basically explain that, like, it just wasn't the demographic that they were aiming for, right? That when they created Timberland, it was meant to be a work boot for working people. And the working people that he was imagining, and he doesn't quite say this, but it's all implied in the undertext, is white working class people.
Working class, once again.
Yeah, exactly. And he's completely ignoring the fact that many of the Black people that are wearing Tims are working class people too, who just happen to spend their money differently.
Absolutely. This is what I'm saying. Martin Luther King, them niggas was marching for access to shoes.
I don't think you're wrong. And he catches a lot of flack for that, right? Like, people get pretty upset at the idea of this guy basically saying, like, I don't want niggas wearing my boots, or at least that wasn't the plan. And so Timberland then has to do a lot of fixing and reevaluating in terms of their relationship with the Black community. And it's not until like the late 90s that Timberland starts to really like invest in Black advertisement, that they start to really like put the Tim's ads in the Vibe magazines and start to reassociate themselves with the hip hop artists intentionally and not just like on accident with Nas rapping about it or Biggie rapping about it.
Listen, I'm telling you, man, Ghostface Killah is the fucking civil rights leader of our time. No one's going to convince me otherwise. Nobody can convince me.
Put Ghostface, put Ghostface on the monument, because that he's it. That's all right. We need.
I want one of them like posters that you buy on the side of the road where someone's also selling shea butter and black soap. Yep. With like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X like playing pool with Obama. And I want Ghostface there like shooting dice in the corner.
Yeah, I love that. I want one of those Tyrese paintings. Tyrese made that beautiful painting where
wait,
it was...
Wait.
Tyrese, oh, you didn't know about this?
Nigga, no. What?
Okay, well, wake up, brother. There's other artists out here other than Picasso. There's other artists out here than your Basquiat. A brother named Tyrese Gibson of Fast and Furious fame made a beautiful painting in which Malcolm X is baptizing Tupac in a river as, I believe, Martin Luther King looks on from I've the seen heavens.
That. Tyrese made that?
That's a Tyrese Gibson original. Put that up in your home.
Oh, my God.
You should be so lucky to get the original of that.
Wow. Baby boy out here.
Yeah. No, he did that. And he's continuing to do the work. And we don't give him enough credit. It should be Ghostface and Tyrese Gibson as the greatest civil rights leaders we have. And Shannon Sharp, for some reason. I think Shannon Sharp does a lot of good work for the black community. He's just mush mouth, so we can never tell what he's saying.
I agree. I love Shannon Sharp. Excellent memes. There's some excellent meme work.
Great memes. The bug-eyed, sweaty man. I love that.
He deserves it. He works hard.
He works hard. Okay, so this is where I think it gets even more interesting. So the quote that we were talking about goes on in the conversation. He went on to say, if you hear that hip-hop kids are wearing Timberland boots and women are wearing Timberland boots with sundresses at a Donna Karan fashion show, that's a coin in current dollars. But how in the world is that sustainable? So he's basically asking the question, how long is hip-hop going to last? And so in retrospect, he now knows hip hop is going to become the biggest industry in all of music and like the most profitable of all of like the music forms. And so Timberland then has to realize that and fix that. And so in the late 90s is when they start introducing all the Tims with like the custom colors and like the weird designs and shit. And it's because they started fully being aware that like, oh shit, hip hop's not going anywhere. And we can't just keep servicing a bunch of dudes who are only going to buy work boots every 5 years.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is like, if you're like fashionable, you'll buy a new shoe every season or more, right? But yeah, if you're like actually using Tim's to like go to work,
right,
you buy them shit and then you don't buy some until the next decade.
Yeah, I'm not gonna keep buying more every, but like a dude who's really into Tim's and wants to look fly will buy a new pair every month. And like,
yeah,
that's real money that you could be gaining. And so I think they figured out that like this is the brand we need to invest in and stop playing like this is a hard working man's boot.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, maybe the most expensive shoe I ever bought in my life was like a Timberland streetwear mashup.
Oh, in college. Sure. One of them Supreme type energies of like,
yeah, it was,
we're linking.
Them shits were cold.
Yeah.
They were like very high and they had this like, they were like gray suede.
Yeah.
Them shits felt like walking on baby seals.
Sure. Oh my God.
But damn, wow, that's you really like actually researched it.
Yeah, no, I take my time with it. Here's so Timberland, after this this debacle, if you will, this issue with offending the black community or offending the hip hop community, then sort of like tries to rebrand itself as like a cool brand that deals in respectable politics and doesn't, you know, looks out for the community, even though they're a $1 billion industry and probably do horrible things and whatever. But in 2010, Timberland once again gets in trouble, not with the black community this time, but Greenpeace comes after them because they claim that Timberland has a bunch of connections with deforestation in Brazil, that like they are responsible for farmers who are cutting down massive amounts of the rainforest so that they can basically set up cattle farms and then sell timberland back the cowhide.
Damn. You know what? I'm gonna fuck you up real quick.
Okay, hold on. You about to talk that talk? Because I'll let you talk that talk.
Yes, let me talk that talk.
Okay, Nate, this is beautiful. I'm excited. I'm gonna give you 30 seconds. Whenever you're ready, talk that talk.
All right, so you said that Timberland is responsible for deforestation in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Word. That makes sense to me. Well, you know what else was in Brazil? The majority of the slaves in the transatlantic slave trade.
Whoa.
Listen, right? Brazil black as fuck. Brazil is some nigga shit. They don't want you to know that, right? But you gotta stay woke. And this is the thing about it. They deforest, and what are they doing with the trees? Hanging niggas.
Whoa. Bah. Shit.
That's called motherfucking bars, nigga. You know nothing about
that. Talk that talk, Nate. Okay. I see what you're doing. It's connecting. It's starting. The math is starting to math. We're talking about deforestation. The trees is still the emphasis. It is a homage to the history that they've built of hanging niggas from trees. And they go to the most niggery place they could find, which is Brazil in this scenario.
Listen, there's no more niggery place in the Western Hemisphere.
That might be true. I don't have the math,
look,
but I think that might actually be true. It's between that and in the south side of Chicago. It's one of those.
it's one of look, you ever seen capoeira? Them niggas are doing martial arts and dancing. That is the most nigga shit ever, because niggas love Bruce Lee movies,
right?
And motherfucking funk records,
right? Everybody's fighting like the Black Power Rangers, so yeah, that makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me. Now, it is worth noting, and your talk that talk was exceptional, but it is worth noting that Timberland actually said that only 7% of their cattle comes from Brazil, and then immediately after was like, we'll stop. We'll just stop so that y'all don't have to claim that we did that anymore. And they have also, like, gone out of their way to be anti-racist when, like, a French fashion label, APC, their CEO came out in the middle of a big conference and basically, like, went on stage and said, I want to make sure I have this right. He says, I call this one look last niggas in Paris. This is a white man. Why? Because it's the sweet spot when the hood meets Bertolucci's movie Last Tango in Paris. So that's last niggas in Paris and last niggas in Paris, after an awkward pause. And then he goes, oh, I'm glad some people laughed at me. Yes, I mean, it's nice to play with the strong signifiers. The Timberland here is a very strong ghetto signifier. In the ghetto, it is all the Timberlands, all the big chain. Not all the same time, never. It's bad taste. So we design Timberlands with Timberlands.
It's bad taste.
It's bad taste.
I love that, because now I'm just imagining, like, a Thug That nigga, like, imagine, like, 2 Chainz, like putting on his chains, sure, and then, like, about to, like, put, like, the third chain on, yeah, and just be like, it's bad.
That's
taste.
Bad taste.
Put that shit back.
I got on my Timbs and 3 Chainz. Get the fuck out of here. I'm not unreasonable. That's bad taste. So Timberland hears this guy go on this weird fucking French rant.
Wow.
And then they, like, hey, we can't work with you anymore. And they were celebrated as heroes for cutting that relationship.
Damn. Ghetto Signifier is the name of my next rap album.
That shit
is great. Wow. Honestly, I love, like, I know that was a racist, like, little thing that he just said.
Yeah.
And I agree. But wow, it was just so good.
Yeah. Like, no, he was spitting. And I didn't like what he was spitting. But bars is bars. You know what I mean? Like, you got to
talk that talk.
Yeah, let him shine. Let him finish his sentence. Then you deal with the emotional feelings afterwards. But nah, fuck that. Let him go off.
I think, damn, this is how, like, Tekashi 6ix9ine fans must feel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
Damn.
It's just them being like, damn, I don't know, bro. He going off. I don't agree with it, but go crazy.
Yeah, shit. Look, life is YOLO.
YOLO. Thank you, Drizzy. Yolo. We're going to take one more break, and we'll be back with more Nate Marshall and more My Mama Told Me. And we are back.
If you want to reach those kids on the street, then you got to do a rap to a hip-hop beat.
Oh, my God.
So I gave my sermon an urban kick. My rhymes are fly. My beats are sick. My crew is big, and it keeps getting bigger.
That's because Jesus Christ is my nigga.
Yeah, we're back here with more Nate Marshall. We're celebrating Jesus Christ, our nigga Jesus Christ, and all he does for us. Had you heard that before? You know that song?
He's the son of the original G. You goddamn right I know that song.
I love that.
I played that shit the other week for my girlfriend because I was like, babe, have you never heard this? And she was like, no, what are you talking about? Yeah.
You've never heard this masterpiece?
This shit is like Purple Haze to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's my sure. Illmatic.
I love that. Y'all can have Jimi Hendrix if you want to. I want that old dude in a backwards hat and a suit jacket for some reason.
Right. That's my songs in the key of life.
I have a fun game for us to play, and it's a game called Make That Brand Racist. Love that chicken for Popeyes. It's a very fun game where I will introduce to you much in the way that we are unpacking the Timberland logo and potentially connecting it to the KKK and hanging people from trees, I am going to introduce to you other logos that potentially might have something insidious in their imagery. And what I would love for you to do is just unpack it. Help me find the racist elements of whatever this is. That work for
perfect.
You?
Perfect. I love finding the racism.
Love finding the racism. Great. So the first logo, and I'm going to describe them all. I'm not even going to show them to you. They're all ones that you're familiar with, I'm sure. And if you need to look them up, you absolutely can. But the first logo is the polo logo, the man on the horse swinging the polo stick, the polo logo. What's racist in there?
Okay. All right. So I was watching The Godfather the other day, mm-hmm. right? You know, in The Godfather, the like big movie executive, he has this beautiful horse that he loves.
Yep.
There's a point where the horse gets like fucking killed. The head is chopped off and left in a dude's bed.
Yes.
It's like a threat. But you know who was taking care of the horses? Niggas. That's the only black people in the fucking Godfather. It's the motherfucker who's taking care of the horses. It's the only one. So.
Okay. Hell yeah.
It's racist because niggas took care of the horses,
sure,
but couldn't ride the horses. Also, did you know, and this is actually a true fact, a bunch of the motherfuckers who used to win the Kentucky Derby were black, and black people were winning so much, they had to ban niggas. They banned niggas in like the late, early 20th century.
Whoa!
Because niggas
would... That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. The shit was, it was like the fucking NBA. It was just, everybody was black. Swear to God.
Whoa, I didn't know that. Okay, there's a few things to unpack in that statement because number one, I love the fact that yes, the black people who took care of that horse should be in the logo as well. They should be like posing next to the horse, like posted up, you know, like, yeah, that's my horse. I brushed his tail.
Right.
I made him look fly. And it's not just the dude who's swinging the polo mallet that gets to be celebrated. It's some niggas that worked hard on it. But then, holy shit, I had no idea that black people were banned from horse racing. That's nuts.
Yeah, that shit is true.
Man, I learn something new on this podcast every day, and some of it's made up, and I still celebrate it.
Stay woke. Okay. Next logo.
Okay, the next logo. This is exciting. Lacoste. You know that alligator with his mouth open. He's got a red tongue, and his mouth is open. The Lacoste logo. What's racist in the Lacoste logo?
Oh, damn, this is actually a very easy one.
Okay.
This is very easy. You ever heard the term gator bait?
I have not.
So this is this thing. I think, I don't know if it was true or if it's like a sort of urban legend, but they say that like in slavery times, like in Florida, in like the sort of southern swampland, like white people would use black babies, like black enslaved babies.
Whoa.
And feed them motherfuckers to alligators. And actually, the University of Florida, I think, who are the Gators, right? They're, that's like their football team, all that.
Yeah.
They have like, they do like the chomp thing, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think they have like a gator bait song or chant or something. And they like, you know, this summer, like the George Floyd stuff, all that stuff, Breonna Taylor, all that, like happened. And people were like, you know, we're the Washington football team now or whatever the fuck.
Oh.
Racism. They are like, we're going to stop doing
that. They were like, hey, guys, we, you know, that racist song we sing? We'll chill. We ain't got to do that no
sorry,
more.
Sorry. swear to God, easy.
Whoa.
Them niggas eating black babies.
Man, you're killing it right now. I didn't know. That's another fucking thing I didn't know. Gator bait? They were feeding, or at least imagining feeding black slave children to alligators? That's just mean. Man. There's not even a reasoning for it.
That you losing money, dog. You fucking up your own.
That
paycheck.
Little black baby could have grown up to be a useful tool. A nice.
He could have been a cobbler.
Mm.
And then we could have better quality black shoes in the community.
Oh,
and then Martin
shit.
King wouldn't have had the money.
Oh shit. Oh fuck. So you saying they're stealing our potential leaders and best from us by feeding them to alligators for their own entertainment. And even worse, now they put that alligator that they use to murder those black babies on a polo shirt that they sell for $70 and put a pastel color on it and make it seem like it's an expensive, illustrious brand. This is wild. Lacoste, shame on you for that thing that we just created as a fictional thing that you did.
They just taunt us, man.
Here's another fun one. And maybe this will be our last one. This is a fun one, and I'm very excited for this one. Chanel. The label Chanel, which is those two C's that are interlinked, that are not facing each other, but are still linked in the middle. What's racist about Chanel?
Damn. Oh, this is interesting. You know, I realize also that now I'm going to just be playing this game constantly with myself.
It's so fun. It's a fun game. I'm so happy I came up with it.
Damn. Okay. Chanel. Oh, all right. Got it. All right. I don't know if you remember. There was a guy, I think his name was Reverend like Joseph Lowry or something. He gave the benediction at Obama's first inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a point where he was like, where he started saying this sort of little chant. He was like, you know, if you brown, stick around. If you black, stay back.
Mm-hmm.
If you white, you all right. All the, right. He was like, the days of that are gone. That was kind of his,
right.
His like moment, right? He where motherfuckers were like, oh, that nigga spit.
Yeah.
But I think that the Chanel logo is a visual metaphor for if you black, get back. Because it's like, the C, which stands for colored, like walking towards you. But then there's another C that's like, nah, you gotta go back.
Oh.
It's like he's being turned around.
It's like a mirror image. It's like the person being redirected in the direction that they were supposed to be in their mind.
Right. Like the first C is like, I would like to eat at the lunch counter. And the second C is like, nah.
They said I can't come in.
You can't get no fucking sandwich.
Man, you fucking nailed it. The only thing I could come up with was Caucasian. C for call and C for Cajun.
Wow, Cajun. Wow, I'm only calling white people Cajuns.
Y'all Cajun. Look at these Cajuns over here.
That's some Cajun activity.
Yeah, these Cajuns acting up. This was fun. This was a great time.
This is great.
Nate, can you tell the people at home where they can find you? Any cool shit you have going on to look out for?
Yeah. What do y'all need to know? I don't know. I'm on Twitter. I tweet about poems and shit that makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm at Illuminate Mics, M-I-C-S, all one word, on there. I don't know. Just Google me. I write poems. Buy my book. Whatever.
Buy the man's
God bless
book.
You.
God, and God bless you, but buy his goddamn book before I get upset. You idiots. What are you listening to this for if you're not going to buy his book? Dummies.
Listen, In the next book, I'm putting this Maya Angelou poem. So get ready for that one.
That's just gonna be the whole cover is the Maya Angelou poem, and then you open up for Nate's work.
Yeah, pre-order that book. It's gonna be called The Last Niggas in Paris.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful piece. And as always, you can find me at Langston Kerman. And please, if you have any drops, if you have any conspiracy theories, if you have any cool stuff that you think that I should be aware of or you want to hear on the podcast, please send that to mymamapod@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Like and subscribe to the podcast. I love when people say mean things, so go crazy on that. Otherwise, bye.